Big news story this week, Marcus, about a internationally renowned sports person, household name.
Yes.
Legend of her sport.
Big name. Big name.
What I'm saying is that she's a big name. Dropped a bombshell, which was not only that she was pregnant, but that she in fact took out a major tournament while pregnant, before anyone even knew.
That's amazing. Unveil this big name.
Serena Williams, if you missed this during the week.
Yeah, amazing stuff.
Yeah, and as is pretty much standard these days, dropped a hint on social media about the pregnancy. It's really the only way to let people know that you're pregnant these days is a kind of vague hint to the fact that you're pregnant. Usually, hers was a photo of her, a fairly revealing shot of her with a bit of a baby bump and a caption, 20 weeks, which I guess maybe is not that vague.
Why does it have to be not obvious?
Why can't they just say, hey, we're pregnant.
I'm happy. I'm pregnant.
Too obvious, Marcus.
Yeah.
Too obvious.
I'm behind it. I've got to catch up with this
stuff.
Yeah,
you've got to be sly and, you've got to be a bit hip about these things. So anyway, that post was removed, though. It was put up and then pretty briskly taken down.
Deliberate?
Yeah. Only she could have done that. So she put it up then took it down. I don't know if that was to add to the mystery or if there was just some remorse. But then anyway, a spokesperson confirmed that, she is pregnant 20 weeks, which means she was about 2 months pregnant when she won the Australian Open. And I think everyone's pretty flabbergasted at that.
That's an amazing achievement. If you watch those girls in action, they are stretching, contorting, grunting.
Yeah.
But obviously she had advice that it was okay and her body is tuned to that sort of physical duress and strain, but still an amazing achievement.
And some smart aleck suggested online that perhaps she is ineligible to have won the tournament because she was actually playing a doubles match. So maybe there's something that the authorities need to look into there. Clearly, it's not going to be an advantage, is it?
No, not at all. The big question, and I guess it's always the thing we like to see, is how does a sports person recover after pregnancy and can they get back to the sports person they are or do they have the motivation to do so? There's so many great sports people that have had children and given it a crack, and generally I don't think they come back and have the absolute passion and drive, as you can understand.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. And the other thing is when a woman leaves work to have a baby, it seems like in the general public, for someone who has the baby and then wants to return to work, kind of just very general rule of thumb seems to be you maybe take a year out.
A year out, yeah.
And then come back. What about the world's best tennis player? Like, how long until we see her back on the court?
Oh, it's hard to say how long.
I've got an idea.
Oh, tell us then.
Lunchtime the next day.
Lunchtime next day? Yeah. She probably could do it. If anyone could do it, she could. She is a built woman in terms of sporting athleticism. She years on the circuit. Years.
Yeah.
Her body is hardened for tennis, and you're probably right. She could probably do it with one of those little carry-alls for the baby, maybe on the back.
And how good a tennis player is the kid going to be?
Yeah, pretty impressive. Pretty impressive.
The Serena's fiance is the founder of Reddit, a very popular online community.
Mm-hmm.
So the kid's going to have the technical smarts and the sporting ability of the world's best.
The Williams, that is a great combo. Sorry to...
You're set.
The Williams sisters have dominated tennis for what, 15 years or longer?
Oh, it feels like for 50 years.
Yeah. So 15 years, this will probably be the end of an era. But then in another 15 years, we could see
Williams domination.
With her sitting in the stands looking angry and bitter.
Washed up. Speaking of genetic things.
Genetic things, yes.
Interesting development during the week about IVF.
Parents-to-be hoping to choose the gender of their baby will have to go overseas for the procedure. The nation's peak medical council has decided to uphold a national ban on the practice. Your thoughts, Tim?
Well, I'm not sure that I knew it was happening already.
No, what they're saying is we'll uphold that standard that you can't pick the sex
of
the baby.
So basically it's just been ruled out. This is never going to be an option in Australia.
In Australia.
But you can go away overseas and manipulate the gender of your baby.
I think it's the right decision. I think IVF is there for people who can't have children. It's not about selecting the type of children you want.
It doesn't feel right. It really seems a bit wrong because, and I don't like the slippery slope arguments where, well, if we allow gay marriage, well, then before you know it, people are going to be marrying their dogs because it's a slippery slope. That is, and for the record, that's not what I think, but that's the sort of argument that gets put under this slippery slope banner. And I can sort of see how with this genetic stuff, it's, well, if you're picking out the gender, well, then what's next? You want to select the color of their eyes and how tall they are and it starts to become quite weird because, I mean, where does that end?
As you know, recently my partner gave birth to two lovely twins.
I do know this.
But they've got...
Just for the record, congratulations.
Thank you.
Again, they've both actually congratulated you. But
yeah, thank
not
you.
Not on the podcast.
They both have, or it looks like they're both going to have bright orange hair. Now, if the IVF...
As you hoped.
If the IVF slippery slope goes that way... Would we have doctored them to not have red hair?
Well, that's the thing. But then maybe you wouldn't have. But then you would have others who would. It all comes down to the whim of the parents. Mm. What happens if you are born to nutbag parents who think, well, I'd like to have an 8-foot bald daughter with like with horse hooves for feet, like, just because I think that would be funny. And, you know, because most parents will make. You know, sensible decisions, but not all parents can be trusted. Every year we see a list of children's names that have been made illegal because some nitwit parents have tried to name their kid, you know, like Scratch Face or something absurd.
I've met Scratch Face. Lovely kid.
I didn't mean to put down any Scratch Faces out there.
He's a pacifist, by the way. Requirements for Australian citizenship, I always struggle with that word, Tim, are being tightened. Applicants will face a standalone English test and be asked to commit to embracing our values. They'll also be required to have lived in Australia as a permanent resident for at least 4 years, up from 1 year. Tim, I'm liking some of these parts of the test, whether it's too demanding on people, possibly. But for me, I think if you come to Australia, there should be a little bit of embracing of our values that are held in general in Australia. Not talking about controlling how you live your life, just a few basic principles. And knowing the English language makes you a much more worthwhile part of society, I reckon.
Well, I haven't heard anyone criticise these changes. It all seems to be pretty positive. And speaking of tests... This would go over well in the old front bar test. If you were sitting on a bar stool in a pub, I think this kind of change, which is basically to make sure people who are coming to the country are committed to some of our, you know, baseline ideas, which are that, you know, we're all equal and we all get a fair go and you don't hit your spouse. You know, that would go over well. I think people would think, yeah, well, in a way... It's a bit of a shock. Have we been letting those people in all along?
Yeah, to me it's as you said, it's a good bar topic. But are we going backwards? And if so, why did we go forwards and relax it so much that anyone that couldn't speak English and thought Australia sucked could come in anyway? But
yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. I think that tightening it up like this is a good thing. Another of the new questions, I think, is sort of along the lines of, is it okay to force children to marry? I mean, I guess it's a good question to ask because anyone who says, yes, that's okay, then we could fairly assume, well, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. You're not really going to enjoy living here. Or then again, you know, you are going to enjoy living here, but you're going to have the complete wrong kind of idea about how to go about things. And in that sense, no, it's probably not going to work. And I I don't know if this is a bit of a backwards or hillbilly mentality to have, but I do feel like what we have in Australia is unique in a way, and definitely special. And if you're leaving somewhere for pretty, you know, decent reasons, like, you know, you're under the rule of a maniac dictator, or
Scratch face
is, you know, telling everyone what to do, or you're under threat of violence, then wherever you're coming from, they probably haven't got it right. You know, you probably want to look at, you know, trying a new way, and that's what Australia is. So I think we're right to stick strong to, you know, those fairly baseline things that have helped make our country, you know, a fairly free and happy place.
Immigration and other topical society sort of debating points have all been raised in one very popular TV show over the past 30 years, and that is, Tim?
All Together Now.
The Simpsons.
Oh, The Simpsons, that's right, yeah.
All Together Now. Is that...
I think that was John English.
And I think Steve Jacobs.
Yeah, now better known now perhaps as a Nine, Channel 9 weatherman.
Yeah. Well, we are actually talking about The Simpsons, though. Those animated family, the Yellow family from mm-hmm. Springfield in America, mm-hmm. been going for 30 years.
30 years. By that time, you're an institution, obviously. And not even just in the country where it was started, like world over. If you, I don't know the number of countries that show goes to, but, you know, I fairly comfortably feel like it would be trillions of countries.
And so many celebrities have
all
begged to be on the show.
Yeah, they've all, you know, the ones that haven't been on there wanted to be on there. What I like about The Simpsons is that the original creator, Matt Groening, was basically had a comic strip, and it was called Life in Hell, and he would draw these funny little cartoons about, like, a lot of bunny rabbits and animals and, you know, in sort of human life situations. And when he got offered to make a TV show, he didn't actually want to use his Life in Hell kind of characters, because he sort of felt like that was the special one. That was his real good product. He didn't want to, you know, potentially tarnish it with a TV show. So we just pretty much on the fly came up with this whole other thing, which was a family with characters named after the actual name of his own family.
That's right.
You know, slapped it together, and, you know, 30 years later, who knows about Life in Hell? But, you know, The Simpsons took off like nothing.
And probably, I don't know if it was for the first time, maybe the Flintstones brushed it against it, but it had the humour that could be enjoyed by kids, but there's also the adult humour, the one-liners, the social commentary as well, which made it such an appealing show for everyone.
Like Professor Frink said when he was pushing along that bubbly toy thing, you can't appreciate it on as many levels as I can, which is pretty much sums up The Simpsons, because everyone can watch it and everyone can see little different parts of it, and probably none of us are enjoying it on as many levels as what there are, because all the guys that created that show, the original writers, they're all from Harvard.
Yeah, and I'm sure there was a university degree, or also just web forums just picking apart the show and looking at so many different hidden issues that were part of the show.
It's a dense beast. One other thing, I think we have just grown used to it and brush over it now, but one thing I'd like to just quickly question about the show, where did Marge's blue hair come from? Like, blue hair. Like, I know there's a lot of weird things about the show, but that one stumps me. Why did they decide to make it blue?
Yeah, I guess a few of the other characters had blue hair as well.
Not
and
to
yellow
mention
skin.
The style of the hair, though.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
It looks normal now, but just go back to the beginning and just think how weird that was when we first saw it.
It was. And just finally, disappointment with the show. I was fanatical in my watching of it, but after about 10 seasons and watching the seasons over and over, I never knew when a new episode was on, so it's lost me now. I don't tune in because I don't know when it's a new episode, and I've seen the other episodes 5 or 6 times already.
Yeah. Well, there's ranks of Simpsons fans out there all vying to be the most legitimate fans. And I think you'll run into people who say, you know, once after season 6, it was all downhill. And then, you know, what, they're up to 30 now. And I do feel like it's a different show now, as it should be, because if it's going to still be being made 30 years later, it needs to be different, needs to have changed, and it obviously has done that. Speaking of fanatical viewing, and I haven't watched it for a while, but there was a era of my life where I was so fanatical about it, and let me know if you can match this fanatical story. I would record each Sunday night's episode, the new episode, yes, each Sunday night. I would record it onto VHS and then index it in a little book I had with what each episode number was and what its title was, so I could easily reference each episode, find the right VHS tape, pop it in, go back, replay it, watch it again.
Can't match that. Very sad. Tim, how much responsibility does a sporting club have to, I guess, police supporters' behaviour or supporters in general? This comes after the Port Adelaide Football Club has issued a plea for fans to help identify a man photographed wearing a power jumper and a Nazi armband in Melbourne. Obviously, with that Eddie Betts situation where someone made a racist slur on Facebook, this comes only a week later, so I guess it's a fairly touchy subject. What's your take on it, given this young man may not even be directly connected to the club, but has, I guess, again, tarnished the reputation of the power?
Well, bottom line, don't wear a Nazi swastika.
True.
So whatever else gets said, let's agree that nutbag, don't wear it.
Nutbag,
did the
yes.
wrong thing. So tick. Bottom line, error. He made an error.
Mm.
At best, you don't do that. If he was wearing another club's jumper, would have it been the same story? Maybe. I don't know. It's always going to raise eyebrows when you're getting around with a swastika wrapped around your arm. But as you alluded to, this is playing into really an existing storyline, which has been big in the media since the showdown. And there was racial abuse going both directions towards Crows and Port Adelaide players.
Yes.
So hot on the heels of that, definitely makes it a more topical news story than perhaps it might have been otherwise. Interestingly, at this stage, we don't really know anything about this guy. There's some reports that, well, number one, the photos were taken in Melbourne.
Yes.
So that's an interesting element. Is the guy even a fan of the club? Did he just pick up this jumper from a, you know, charity
chucked in
store?
The bin in disgust after a recent game?
He was snapped in two separate photos wearing two different power jumpers. So it suggests he does have some element of allegiance to the club. But yeah, I mean, the club itself can't be held responsible.
I do sympathise for the club. A footy club, as we once knew it, was a very close-knit community. You'd know each other, you'd know a large amount of people, you'd get together for social occasions after the game. There would be some accountability as a supporter in a club. Now in an AFL club, you're sitting there with around 35,000 to 40,000 people each week. Most of them are members, but do not go back to the club afterwards, do not socialise with the players, do not socialise with other club members. So the term member suggests a very strong and almost intimate connection with the club, but basically it's a ticket to the game, and yet we still see these people as a member of the club, and the club should take some responsibility.
I don't think so. If he turns out to be a member, I reckon he'll be cut loose pretty quick.
I reckon they
won't really want to. I reckon his membership card will be torn up before he knows what's hit him, if it turns out he is a member. And in terms of heading down to the rooms for a bit of a mingle with the boys after the game, I think that'll be off the table if it was ever on it. But yeah, they're not going to want to touch this guy with a barge pole.
But how do you police against individuals that are just nutbags, as you correctly labelled this guy?
Yeah, well, you can't really, can you? I think immediately, as soon as these pictures surfaced, the club put out a pretty short, brief statement saying, we don't know who he is. Obviously, we don't condone what he's wearing, and really distance themselves from it pretty quickly, as, you know, they would. And really, probably, until we know whether he's a member or not, there's not much else they need to do, really. Job done for them.
I don't know if, yeah, I let it go through the keeper yesterday. I saw the picture. I didn't feel it necessary to make a story about it. But obviously, a lot of people think it's a very sensitive topic. It is a very powerful and destructive symbol to have the Nazi armband on. But does it have to directly link to the Port Adelaide Guernsey? Or is it, if he was wearing a God Bless You t-shirt or a Nike t-shirt, how does it change the story?
Yeah, exactly. And that's where I think last week's events play large in this. But interesting, the question of whether it even is a story or not. I think it is, absolutely, just based on the interest in it. If these... it's been an internet-led story, really, from what I can tell. The pictures turned up on Twitter and a lot of the online news sites started running them. If people are flocking to those web pages to see that story and see those pictures, which they are because it's been all across social media, well, I mean, those numbers don't lie. I would think that's a story.
Looking at a lighter story, Tim, a taxi driver in Adelaide has been praised for returning over $1,000 to a customer who left the cash in his cab and obviously did the right thing and is being rewarded with a bit of media publicity. There's an interesting sort of theory we discussed before we came onto this podcast about where is the line where you say, hey, losers, what is it? What's the saying?
Finders, keepers,
losers.
Losers, weepers.
Losers, weepers. I'm thinking 10, 20 bucks. If I haven't really seen the person drop it, I'll probably keep $10 or $20. But pushing up to that $1,000 mark, I think you have to think, how would I feel in that situation if I lost $1,000?
Well, who's carrying $1,000 in a cab? Where's this guy come from? I don't know if it was a guy who lost the money, but who's doing this?
Was it a tourist? If it was a tourist, perhaps you might take that. But even then, you've got debit cards and things like that. So shame on them, basically.
$1,000 sounds like a lot of money just to be waltzing around with. But yeah, I mean, the thing about finding that sum of money is, you start to feel like that you keep that. You're messing with people's lives. That's a chunk of cash right there, isn't it? And like you said, if I lost that, I would be in pain. So you feel like the less amount it is, the lesser deal it is to keep it. But yeah, get into those sorts of figures, and yeah, you want to be doing the right thing. Surely most people would feel that way.
Heard a bit of talk back today about this, and most people were in the taxi driver's corner. You give back their money, there's a feeling of responsibility and empathy with that person. But why are we proud about it? I think we should just say, yeah, the sky is blue, you return money if you've seen someone drop that
money. It's just a done thing, yeah, no big deal, surely. Maybe the entire story is a fabrication to give some good publicity to the taxi industry.
Nice.
Maybe, you know, they're in an all-out war with Uber. Maybe they want to pitch themselves as, you know, lose your cash in our cabs, you'll get it back. Lose it in an Uber, who knows, probably won't. Probably never see that again.
Tim, a heartwarming story made cynical by you. Thank you.
Well, that's what I'm here for.